Welcome to the UFO Files Show.
Welcome to the UFO Files, and of course we're in Eureka Springs, and we are at the Ozark UFO Conference. And we're going to do something a little different. We're going to talk to a few fellow Okies, fellow Oklahomans. You know, Eureka Springs is not that far from Oklahoma, so a lot of people here from Oklahoma. Our first person is an interesting man with an interesting name.
Alan Longo Bucco.
Okay, Alan Longo Bucco. Is that your native name? I mean, did your mother give you that name?
My father did.
Okay, okay. Well, it rolls off the tongue,
well,
that's for sure.
It kind of fits me. It means big mouth.
Okay, now, tell me a little bit about why you're here at the Ozark UFO convention.
It's my third trip. My wife and I came up, and I had my first sighting in 1966, and I came up about 93, 94. I wanted to see if these people were as far out as I thought they were, and they were a lot more centered than I gave them credit, and I enjoyed it.
And well, first of all, you got to tell me about that 1966 sighting.
Well, I was 12 years old, and a friend of mine and I were on our bikes looking toward the water tower, which is a good 2 miles from where we were.
Now, where was this?
This is in Poteau, Oklahoma.
Okay.
There was an oval disc.
We're continuing this hour. We're talking. You know, I'm from Oklahoma as well, mm-hmm. and so we're talking to basically people from Oklahoma. So you fit right into the theme.
It was an oval, and it had a band in the middle, which rotated in one direction, and the whole oval rotated in the other direction. And my friend and I were just embarrassed that we saw this, and we kept looking away, hoping it would disappear.
Oh, really?
Yes. And finally it did.
It's kind of like, don't show it.
Yes. We don't want to know. Please go away. But finally it did, and we realized we don't know which direction it went, how it went, how fast it went.
Now, how old were you again?
12.
12, okay.
And that was my first sighting. I didn't see another one again for maybe 25, 30 years. But that got me on the road. I'm interested in the UFOs. So my friend, it kind of put him on the road away from them because he didn't do anything more with it. And I was more or less stuck with this burden of, now why is this, we see this, where did it come from?
Are you still in contact with this friend at
all? Oh, we're good friends, yes.
Yes, still good.
Yes.
But he's not buying into
it? He vehemently denies that he saw anything, and I have to tell him that his parents beat it out of him or something. I don't know what it was. But
so he's definitely in denial.
Oh, absolutely. And I always razz him about it when I go see him. And he turns embarrassed, turns all kinds of colors, and says, I can't remember. I said, yes, you can. But he doesn't.
No. Where do you live now?
I live in Poteau.
Oh, so you haven't moved.
Well, I've moved around quite a bit.
But you're back. You're kind of like me.
Right.
Okay. let's talk about the rest of this saga. I know there's more to it.
Well, I worked in convenience stores most of my life, and people will tell me things they ordinarily wouldn't tell other people, and I hear about sightings or people getting divorced or getting mad or feeling upset. Yeah. And I hear about some sightings, and people tell me things they haven't told anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And there are quite a few sightings in LaFleur County, where I'm from, a lot more than you think.
Yeah, that's very interesting. That area is very similar to the topography here in Eureka Springs.
Yes.
A lot of people don't know about Oklahoma, that part of it.
Right.
But it's like the Ozarks.
It's very green, lots of water, mountainous.
Now, when we talk about some of the other things you've seen down there, and other people have come in and tell you stories,
right?
Basically, give me a little sampling of what you've seen or what you've heard.
We've had sightings of a disc that landed in a field. We've had in Worcester, which is about 10 miles south of us.
They had a tornado there once. I covered back a long time ago.
Yes. We've had a cattle mutilation at that point, and then there'll be another one in Howe, which is between Poteau. And when I met Linda Moulton Howe, I told her about it. She was shocked that the name of the town was the same spelled the same way as hers.
Yes, H O W E.
Yes, and plus here recently we had these sightings and. On television about a gentleman who was in the military, retired, on January 9th of this year. Well, a friend of mine and I saw something on the Oklahoma side, because that was over in Fort Smith or Van Buren, Arkansas.
For our listeners, Poteau is very close to the Arkansas line.
And we saw lights in the sky change configuration. We really couldn't tell if it was a craft or the lights were all separate, or if they were on a craft because it was so dark. And we were just amazed to see it, and then they disappeared, then they would come back on, and then it flew away. And that's the best we can say about it, except it made no sound whatsoever.
Now, you've had, you've had several of these sightings. Do you think something else might be going on that you don't know about, or have you had contact or anything?
I have no contact, not that I'm aware of, no missing time that I'm aware of. All I can say is they were anomalous lights in the sky that did not move the way I'm used to seeing aircraft move. There's no way of telling who was behind it, who made it. It was too dark, and at night you can't tell distance and you can't tell size because having nothing to compare it with.
Now you're saying that other people have come to you in the same area,
yes,
where you are, and they've seen basically the same thing.
Yes.
Anybody ever talk about contact or anything, or just sights of lights?
It's just sightings, what we've seen.
You've been coming to these conferences now. What do you make of it? I mean, we made a little joking comment at the top of the show here, top of your segment, but what do you really make of all of this? What do you think's going on?
Well, it's quite serious, and it seems to me the serious interest is growing. And I've never been to one of these conferences where we had standing room only at every venue, and that's what we've got.
It does seem like more people are paying attention these days to it. And part of that is that some of the mainstream media all of a sudden has been reporting some things like the Chicago sighting at O'Hare.
Well, Chicago and the Mexico City sightings, the Phoenix sightings, you just can't deny it anymore. I guess if you want to, but there are so many things that you have video of.
So I appreciate you taking your time to come here and talk to me about this and tell me about it, because sightings reports and people having experiences are my favorite shows, really, more even than the researchers, even though I enjoy talking to them, too, a whole lot. But the idea is that people like you, the common man, so to speak, even though you haven't uncommon name. you seem to when you latch onto this, what I'm getting to, and I'm rambling a little bit, but what I'm getting to is when you saw it when you were young, and your best friend, he still denies he saw it. Did you immediately go around and tell people at that point, or you did?
My parents, I told people at school, I told anyone that wanted to listen.
And your friend wouldn't back you up?
No.
He said, I didn't see anything.
Well, he wasn't always with me, and I don't know why I did that, but I mean, I've told people.
He's still your buddy all these
years.
Oh, yes.
He's
never come up on why.
No.
He just really, literally says he didn't see it.
He did not see it. Or he doesn't recall.
Okay.
To the best of his recollection, he cannot recall the sighting. I've drawn pictures of it for people ever since I've seen it, and I stick with my story, and he sticks with his.
Okay, now you're down in what we call in Oklahoma, Little Dixie,
a
southern influence of Oklahoma
state. Yes.
How do people take to you talking to them about UFO sightings? I mean, how does that come up?
I kiddingly say they think I'm a nut.
Yeah.
But
you don't mind.
I don't mind.
You want
to
find out.
I'm not afraid to say, I saw this. You can say what you want. And I have a history of trying to do what I say and say what I do. So I have that type of record as person. But I'm
not a small
town.
Yeah,
everybody knows.
Know
if, you know, if you got in trouble, if you did this, or you know what you did,
right.
They know your family. I'm just going to stay with my story, and I'm not afraid to say that. Maybe that's why more people come to me and tell me things they might not tell anyone else.
And how many people have told you things over the years? 20, 30?
Oh, it'd be. I would say more than 30. I'd say hundreds of people over the years. I worked at a convenience store for almost 30 years.
In this little town in southeastern Oklahoma.
You get lots of people coming through. And you get lots of people you can talk to. And if there's something on TV, or on the news. You bring it up, you're just amazed what a person may say, specifically to a third party who's not related or doesn't know you very well.
Out of those 100 or so people that you've talked to, anybody tell you something you really remember, something unusual?
I have a friend who I still keep in touch with in Colorado who claims he has missing time. And I can't ever corroborate it. However, he just talks about it, and this happened, that happened.
Was he driving a car or something?
It's at home. He told me he'd been at work, and he went to the construction job, and he went over to the next street, working on this block, went to the next street to get some tools. When he finally came back, he nearly got fired because he was gone for like 2 hours, and it would have taken 5 minutes to go get the tools and walk back. And in that time, he said he had a missing time, an abduction. And I thought, well...
Does he say he has scars or anything? Any marks? Or?
He had some, but I don't really remember.
Yeah.
The scary part about that, I forgot, there's times I've woken up and I've had some marks on me, but you don't
really...
But I don't recall anything in that.
Sure.
I almost hate to say it because it's like, oh, yeah, I'm the T2.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, but I'm not that I know of.
Yeah.
I've never had it.
You don't actually recall an experience. But
no.
When you said you have marks or something, what are you talking about?
There'd be like a little scoop mark on my arm.
Well, maybe there's something going on here.
There could be, but I don't. I'm not aware of it.
Our time's almost up for this segment, but since we're doing Okies from Poto and other places, I think we had a couple of people from Oklahoma City, another guy from near my town in Muskogee, over in Fort Gibson. No, Tahlequah is where he was.
Okay.
That whole area, that terrain of that whole area other than Oklahoma City, is pretty much like Arkansas here.
Yes.
And so I can't let you go without asking you, are there any Bigfoot stories down here?
Yes, there are.
When I used to be on the air live, I used to call a sheriff's department down in some little town in Arkansas that they supposedly saw this all the time. And I always got the same dispatcher, for lack of a better term, she had this Arkansas accent.
Yes.
I guess that's the best way.
Yes.
And always she would give me the reports. She would say, oh, there ain't no Bigfoot. They're just talking. That deputy, he doesn't know.
We had one of the things that got me going. There was a sighting in Tallahassee in 1971 of approximately 4 foot hairy creature that came on these kids and scared them to death. They went to the police, the sheriff or someone, not sheriff, they don't have a sheriff, went down there and they shot at it and subdued it. And someone from the Air Force came and took it away. And I read about a similar sighting in a book in 83, so I went down there to investigate it.
Where was this? Tallahassee. Okay, right. Toward Texas and the mountains.
Washita Mountains.
Tallahassee Drive.
And the editor of the paper said there was nothing like that. It never happened. So I wrote the Oklahoma Historical Society, got a copy of the letter of the paper of the Tallahassee American that he edited at the time, that it was a front-page story. So I went back
and
said...
But he didn't remember it.
Yes, he denied it. Said, what about this?
And what did he say?
Oh yeah, but that was a big hoax. I said, well, why'd you put it on your front page?
Yeah.
So if he had just said to me, yeah, we had a bunch of kids, they got drunk, and they got in trouble, and wrecked their parents' car, and they blamed it on Bigfoot or on this, and I would have said, fine, I'll just, you know, he would have fessed up to it. I would have said, fine, I'm going to go home. I'm not going to waste my time. But I spent months tracking this information down, and I finally found it. And the last I'd heard, there actually was some type of Air Force officer that came by and got the thing. But I have no way of corroborating that.
Did the newspaper article describe what Bigfoot looked like?
This was a 4 foot hairy beast.
Not very tall.
Not very tall. No, no. But I've had other reported people tell me of seeing a Bigfoot that rocked their trailer. And they could smell him long before he got to the trailer.
I went on a vacation at Robber State Cave Park down there where the outlaws used to hang out. It's a resort now.
And, yes.
I kept hearing Bigfoot stories, but I never got one as detailed as you just did. So I'm proud of you. Maybe we need to trade places. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
This is Jerry Pippin. We're broadcasting from the Inn of the Ozarks in Eureka Springs.
The biggest secret ever is about to be revealed.
Fast Walkers, UFO and Alien Disclosure.
Words you were never meant to hear.
It's clear we're dealing with a cosmic Watergate.
This is the biggest secret in the history of the human race, the known modern history of government.
Photos you were never meant to see. Video you never knew existed. People you were never meant to meet.
As Jack Nicholson would say, you can't handle the truth.
Essentially everything that you would want to know has been covered up.
Things you were never meant to know about.
No one has produced a higher quality, better produced DVD. Anytime, anywhere. Fast Walkers now available on DVD for only $19.95 at shopjerrypippin.com.
It's Jerry Pippin, and we're at the end of the Ozarks, and it's so fun time week for me because I get to talk to some tall Oklahomans. I have Keith Dunlap here, who had a sighting in Tahlequah, Oklahoma, or near there at least. Where is this?
It's up Highway 10, just north of Tahlequah. It's a scenic river.
Why don't you describe for our listeners what we're talking about here? Northeastern Oklahoma is somewhat like the Ozarks here.
That's right. It's the foothills of the Ozarks, and it has clear streams, and most people wouldn't know it looks like that in Oklahoma. It's Ozarks.
Yeah, but it does, and it's near the Arkansas border, not too far.
And that's right, about 30 miles.
And I believe originally you and your wife had some sort of experience back in 93?
I think it was 93. She was 7 months pregnant with my boy, and we were heading out of Tahlequah, out of town, to go home up Highway 10, and we saw this big gray ellipse, oval thing glowing off, you know, on the horizon. I said, look, hon, a UFO, just joking. We'd known each other for 5 years, never said a word about UFOs.
So uh-huh.
It wasn't on our minds. And as we got down there close to the river and turned up a Highway 10 there, it was getting closer. And then we're like, well, maybe this is a UFO.
Did it get very close to you?
Or? Pretty close. So, well, it got real close eventually. So, as we're heading up the highway there, about 3 miles,
was this morning or night? Or
this was about 10:20 at night. It was dark. And
so there wasn't a lot of traffic out?
Oh, no. We're the only ones. It was classic, you know, out on a country road with a pregnant wife. And So this hill got in the way. It went behind the hill that we were going up, and we're like, wow, well, we crossed paths on the top of the mountain there. So now it's about 150 feet above us. It's about 300 feet long by 150 feet tall.
And it was open. A big one then.
It was big. It was big. It had a blue strobe on the top and white and red in the middle.
Was it oval or circular? Or?
It was...
Or more like a triangle.
It was an ellipse. It was an oval.
Sure,
it was
right.
Perfect.
Okay.
And it was huge. And my God. And then, so we're going down the hill now, and this thing seems to be following us down the hill. It seems to have, you know, gone off its path, and now it's following us.
Had either one of you showed any fear at this time?
Oh,
or
yeah.
You still marveling?
Oh, my Lord, yeah. You know, I had slowed down and stick my head out, and by another 400, 500 yards down the road, I'm calling on Jesus. I'm telling you.
Yeah, right.
And I haven't called on him in a while.
Right. And now, was it making any noise?
No. Well, you couldn't really tell. I was in my car. So finally, we get down to the bottom of the hill there, and it turns into a straightaway. And finally, it breaks off from us. And I'm like, oh, God, thank you. And so it goes off over to, that would be west. So we pulled the car over and stopped. She was braver than I was, actually. We got out, and we listened. I say it makes no sound. It was maybe a slight hum, but really no sound for the size of this thing. And it was amazing.
And it just hung up there, or was it still
just
moving?
No, it was going about, seemed like maybe 10 miles an hour. It was a real cold, crisp night. It was either March 22nd or February 22nd. I can't remember right now, but very clear night. But the edges were fuzzy around it. You know, you couldn't see, you know, very distinct edges, but it
right.
was huge, and it was unbelievable.
Now, do you think more happened than you can remember?
Yeah, I've thought about that, and people have asked me. I don't think so. I'm hoping not. I thought about it.
In other words, neither one, you nor your wife, had any bad memories of Mark's or anything like that?
No, we know of. Now,
did
we
you have any missing time?
That's a good question. Well, we don't think so. We've talked about it a time or two. We did get home, to add to the freakiness of it. When we finally got home, the doors to our house was open.
Oh, really?
Now, that was odd in itself, but, you know,
we kind of chalked that up as maybe...
we left the doors open.
Yeah. In other words, somebody forgot to close it
right,
or something.
Right, but, you know...
I mean, there was nothing missing inside or...
No
evidence of anybody
after
inside.
Seeing that, having to go through the house and make sure no one's in there, that was...
Well, that was a pretty scary night for you, first of all. You see this thing out in the middle of nowhere, and then you get home and your doors are unlocked. But you couldn't make out anything about this other than that it was big.
It was gray, glowing, and fuzzy on the edges. And
Now we have some pictures that you've given us. This was taken basically the same area, right?
That's right. So this was in 93, and so fast forward 12 years, 6/12 of 05, because it's date stamped. Sarah had got a new digital camera, so she was on her way in Sunday morning to, she's the choir director, go to church. And so she's taking pictures of pretty much everything. She sees a nice sunrise, and she's driving down the road. She just sticks the camera out the window.
So she's actually just clicking pictures out the window as she's driving down there.
Right, okay. She took four, and it was, you know, it was a good sunrise. It has the rays coming out and the nice clouds.
Sure,
and
spring.
And so my boys and I had caught a bunch of catfish that next day. So that next weekend, after we download them to the computer, I'm going in there to look at our fish pictures. And I come across these pictures I didn't even know she'd taken. And bam, there it was.
What do you make of those objects? They look like they're circular.
Well, the one that she took, the original one in the sunrise, it looks pretty much, except farther away, just like the thing we saw 12 years.
A traditional UFO.
Right, a big gray thing, and you can zoom in on it, and I'll email it to you.
And then you notice these black objects later.
That's right, and so we're...
They're not that big.
I was reveling in this picture, you know, that Sarah had taken, and then it took me a whole month to figure out, well, if she can do that, I could do that too. So I took the camera, and each time I drove by there, the same place, you know, I just stick the camera out and take pictures of over that hill. And I did that for a couple of months, never spent the time to go look at them, and I was homesick from work one day, and that afternoon I got to feeling better and was kicking around the house. I thought, I know, I'll go look at all those pictures I've taken over the last 2 months. And so I had taken 84, because I go up there about twice a week, right? So four going back by, you know, there's quite a few. Out of 84 pictures, four of them had these round metallic black balls. Considering that hill's probably, I don't know, a third of a mile away, it's hard to tell how big they are. I'm guessing about 6 foot in diameter.
Well, let me ask you this much. You and your wife are here at the... in fact, you were here last year, too, I think.
First time we winged it.
And so you came back to Eureka Springs, to the Ozark UFO Congress, the conference. What do you make of all this? Are you a true believer?
Well, that's a good question.
Are you still
after our original sighting? I guess did what a lot of people do: just file it in the don't know file in your brain, and then about 7 years later, it just suddenly became a thing I had to know. You know, after all these years, and so I've, like most people, researched everything I can on the internet. And what I think is what most of these folks here probably think, and that's they're from somewhere else, no doubt.
And now you mentioned, you know, your religion, your wife's Sunday school teacher or choir director or whatever. Has that affected that?
Yeah, that's a very good question. You know, how do you file this information? You know, when you're brought up to believe in Christ and all these other things, and how does this fit in? It really bothered me. About 3 days after that original thing, you know, the first time we saw it, I just busted down crying. I was out mowing the lawn. And I'm like 34 years old. I'm like, why am I crying? And the reason was is I didn't know what to do with this information, how it fit in. So at that point, I just, like I say, I created a file in my brain. Don't know file. That's where I put it.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't have to deal with it for a while.
So you didn't have to deal for a while.
And, you know, and so I think, I know the Bible says somewhere in there that, in my house there's many, in my mansion there's many rooms, I believe it is. And I, that's what I believe.
Okay.
That
and
there is other beings in this universe.
You're open to the subject, and it's not going to affect the way you traditionally believed and brought up.
Well, it did for a while, but I came to grips
with it. But you know how to deal with it now.
Yeah, I came to grips with it, and it hasn't affected my faith.
You think you had experiences before this one you remember in 93?
No.
And your wife probably, does she ever think she had some other things happen to her before?
Well,
you know, the reason I ask that, because it seems to follow families.
Right. And the answer for her is no, she doesn't remember anything like that. Now, I did have some weird things happening when it seemed like I was around 5 years old. I remember some very strange things that it's very hard to articulate, but some kind of an odd pressure, I don't know. Maybe you'd call it sleep paralysis. I don't know.
You mean bad dreams, or
it's hard to put in words. Seemed like it was a dream, but it felt like I was being enclosed in something, and I never did know what was going on.
You had some sort of feeling, some sort of something couldn't put your hands on.
Right.
As a child, especially, but
yes.
Anxiety of some
right.
sort.
Right, and something was happening, and it felt like to me as a child that. It sounds odd, but I was being rolled up in a rug or something, you know, just some kind of an odd pressure that I didn't have a handle on and didn't know what was going on. But whether that fits in here, I can't say. I really don't want to know.
I understand. But at the same time, you come to these conferences now.
That's right. Well, we came here for the fun of it, to get away. And you know, it's a romantic little town, and you know, we get to kill two birds with one stone. Come be together and have
right.
some fun times.
Yeah, well, thank you for coming by and talking to us about this, and thank you for the pictures.
You're welcome.
They are phenomenal, and this digital camera existence we now have, it does seem like a lot of things show up we don't see.
Yeah, that's right. I looked into that, too, because I was wondering, you see it on some of these websites, you know, and it's 99% of them, they'll say the same thing. We were taking a picture of whatever, and we saw nothing. Got home, there it is, and it's a function of the digital camera, I understand.
And you don't think it was the camera making something up? You think it was seeing something?
That's right, I believe, and I'm pretty sure I read on the Internet.
And in other words, it wasn't creating
a
false image. It was
no.
basically something that the naked eye doesn't notice, at that instant, we're not paying attention.
It's either going so fast the naked eye can't see it, or it's picking up a larger snapshot of the light spectrum outside the visible light spectrum. That's my belief.
Well, I imagine you check your digital camera shots more often now.
No doubt.
And a little closer.
After that deal, that second time I started getting those black balls in there, I carry it always, and I take pictures of the sky.
Okay, we have Keith Dunlap. Thank you very much for coming by. So far, the show's been all Okies. We'll see how it turns out for the hour. Still got a half hour to go. Don't go away. I'm Jerry Pippin. This is the UFO Files.
Thank you, Jerry. Appreciate it.
Good show. Tennessee Vermont.
The year was 1970 when Jack Blanchard and Misty Morgan released their first big single hit, Tennessee Birdwalk. For the first time in the history of music, this 45 RPM single becomes available to the public in the form of a mouse pad. Made of high-quality quarter-inch rubber, this fabric-covered 8-inch mouse pad delivers your mouse a very smooth ride. For only $9.95 plus $2.50 shipping and handling, your mouse pad will be rushed via USPS first-class mail. Simply click on the happy little mice and be directed to our ordering page. Hurry while this limited time offer lasts.
We are broadcasting from the end of the Ozarks in Eureka Springs, Arkansas, the UFO convention here, the Ozark UFO convention. I always love coming here because of the fact that I always get to meet a lot of people from Oklahoma, my home area. And I used to work in Oklahoma City at WKY and KMOA and a couple of the stations. Couldn't hold a job. But anyway.
No. Birthday's this weekend.
Yeah, he's older than me.
So is he? Yeah.
Man, since Danny Williams. So, anyway, your name is?
Jerry Spence.
And do you spell it like the lawyer?
No.
Okay, you spell it like me, Jerry, J-E-R-R-Y. That's a good way.
That's the best way.
Yeah. And this is the first time you've been to one of these conferences?
Yes, sir.
And you were telling me just a second ago before we started recording here that you had a sighting.
Yeah, I'd seen a UFO in Oklahoma City over I-35.
And this was back, what, 64, 65?
It's anywhere from 63 to 65. I'm real sure about that.
You know, the reason I mention the date is because there was a huge flap over the Midwest, Wichita, Kansas, Oklahoma City, Panhandle of Texas back in 1965. But there were things that led up to it. Tell us a little bit about your sighting.
Well, I was a young boy, and I was out in the front yard playing, goofing, whatever a young boy's doing.
He's a lot younger than me, folks, because in 64 I was but I'm younger than Danny Williams, so go ahead.
We don't need to tell age, but anyhow, I got up and looked over, and you could see I-35 from my front yard, and there was an object over the top of I-35. And the longer I looked, the more people in the neighborhood came out. And my dad even came out, and he stated a weather balloon. And I looked at Dad thinking, at the young age I was, this is probably the first time I disagreed with my dad, but Dad, that's not no weather balloon.
It was a disc shape or what?
It looked like a gold ball.
Okay, round, just like a ball.
Just a gold ball hanging over I-35. It zipped in, dropped down, then angled up and stopped.
Now, was this I-35 south or I-35 north up toward Edmonds? Which side?
Well, it's between 36th Street and 44th Street.
Okay, I know where it is. South side.
Yeah, south. Yeah, it would be south.
Yeah, and the reason I mention that is because I met you on the south side of Oklahoma City. At Chastain's, I think.
It might have been.
About 1972 or so. Mm-hmm. I was just in there doing research on music. What's your name?
Bill May.
Okay. And Bill and I correspond all the time on the on the web by email. Did you make it to Laughlin?
Yeah, just for one day, briefly.
And you didn't say hello to me. You might have waved at me.
I waved at you.
Yeah, right. But that was about it. We were pretty busy. We had nonstop tapings here.
Yep. You were a busy boy.
Now, tell me a little bit about your sighting. You have one, too. Well, you had more than one.
And I think it was just one in that same time frame in the mid-60s. It was the summer of 64. And I was riding in a pickup truck with my parents. And I was riding shotgun, and I was looking out the window just kind of daydreaming, and the sky was clear as a bell. There was nothing in the sky, no clouds, no planes, nothing, except straight overhead, and there was a long cylinder-shaped object. It could have been a jet with a short vapor trail, except that it did not move. It stayed in the same place. I observed it for maybe 30 minutes between like Eufaula and Seminole. I kept telling my parents to look at it, that there was something up there, that, you know, a UFO type thing, or something where I couldn't explain, didn't believe it was a plane. And they kept saying, oh, it's just a cloud, oh, it's just a vapor trail, don't worry about it. And they would not look. And I thought that was strange at the time, and I still do.
Now, have you had any sightings recently or any experiences?
Not really, no.
And you haven't either, right?
No, but I know someone that's close to me that they seen something in Texas.
Recently?
No, it's not real recent.
So
last 20 years.
It comes up. Do you ever mention your sightings, or do you have to wait till somebody else mentions it?
Oh, no. I mean, when people talk about UFOs, I'll mention mine.
And how about you, Bill? You made it all the way out to Laughlin. You come to these conferences. Find anything interesting these days in these conferences? Anything really good?
Yeah. Well, I've always been interested in this subject ever since I was a little kid. I don't know why. Maybe it has something to do with the fact that I was born in 47 and fixing to turn the big.
All these guys are rubbing this in about that.
Yeah.
I'm hanging around younger men.
And events happen.
I like hanging around younger women better. But.
Just lead me to be interested in the subject. I should have got interested in it a little bit more while I was in the Navy, and maybe I could have learned something because I spent 3 years on the bombing range at Fallon, Nevada.
Ah, yeah. In the Navy, you know, they do a lot of research out there in the middle of the desert. They're always talking about the Air Force out there, but the Navy's got quite a presence.
Navy's got a lot. The Air Force had to do an emergency engine change on an SR-71 at our base in 68. And we got to
watch the Blackbird,
The Blackbird, and we got to watch the whole thing. And we were cleared for secret, and we had a vault and files and all that stuff. And we didn't have any idea that that thing existed until they landed it on our runway. And they told us a cover story that it was flying out of McClellan, which is north of Sacramento. And we just bought right into it, and we had no idea there was an Area 51 then. I didn't know there was an Area 51 until I moved to Las Vegas in 88.
Now, when you saw this Blackbird land, did it make a lot of noise?
I didn't actually see the landing. Okay. It came in on one engine, and they had to do an engine change out there. And I guess it was able to land pretty good. But
It's interesting you guys would have an engine. I guess they shipped the engine in.
They brought the engine in a 141, a C-141. That was before C-5As were built. And they brought another C-41 full of security guards. They brought in a starting unit that had four Nailhead Buick engines in it that they had to synchronize. And this one guy, I was more interested in that than I was the plane.
Yeah, because that was more of your field, I guess.
I'm a gearhead. I'm a car nut, and I like hot rods and Harleys and stuff of that nature. And I was an avionics technician, but my aptitude was more mechanical.
You know, I'm not knocking the Air Force at all, but the real UFO secrets seem to have been developed by the Navy.
Naval Intelligence, the name Naval Intelligence always comes up when you're mentioning UFOs.
Well, I'm going to let you guys go to your conference. Who's your favorite speaker so far you've seen?
Just got here.
Just got here. Okay, we haven't seen anything yet. Okay, well, I better let you get in there then. It's nice to meet both of you, and nice to talk about Oklahoma City again. Okay. Some interesting Oklahoma people. We're going down south to Texas next as we continue with the UFO Files live from Eureka Springs, Arkansas at the Ozark UFO Conference. Don't go away.
Major sighting here.
Weird happenings in the skies over Phoenix recently, and no one seems to be able to explain what it was.
And now, suddenly six amber orbs in a row, totally equidistant from each other, massive span across, pop up.
People say they saw strange lights.
A series of strange bright lights seen over the skies of Arizona gets a lot of people wondering.
There are another 10,000 Arizonans who saw the same thing.
Eyewitnesses who saw it say it's like nothing they've ever seen before.
Last night, shortly after 8 p.m., hundreds, maybe thousands of Arizonans reported seeing a triangular-shaped object with three to
thousands of people saw more than stars in the night sky.
The mystery remains unsolved and controversial.
There was nothing there.
Award-winning documentary by Dr. Lynn Kitar, The Phoenix Lights, is now available from ShopJerryPippin.com. Order now. Supplies limited. Jerry Pippin, and we are, of course, at the end of the Ozarks, and we're broadcasting from the Ozark UFO Conference. And we have a man here who's, he's not, I did a couple of Oklahoma people, but he's next door. He's in Texas, Joe Lules. And Joe, you have a book out that Galdi Press has out called, I love the title. It's called Rulers of the Earth.
Yes, that just came out this weekend.
It had its inauguration here at the Ozark Conference. It's basically a continuation of a book that I wrote 10 years ago called The God Hypothesis. The God Hypothesis came out in 97.
Yeah, and I'm quite familiar with that book, by the way, because I used to have a person that emailed me from El Paso who would talk about your book. and so this is more or less a sequel.
It is a sequel, yes. It's a continuation, really, because the God Hypothesis was the story of my entry into UFO research in 1993. And this is the continuing journey of one man's findings. No budget research, volunteers only. But
sounds like my operation.
Yeah. And you know, we didn't start out with the notion that we were going to be able to resolve the UFO issue. All we wanted to do was learn as much about it as we could. And we were particularly interested in this thing called alien abduction. So I formed a team of, we had a psychiatrist, we had a couple of hypnotherapists, and we started a MUFON chapter, a Mutual UFO Network.
Sure.
Chapter, and we started having meetings, and before long we had people lined up who had said that they had had contact with non-human entities. And so we began to do psychiatric evaluations on them first, and then if they passed that, we would begin to investigate their stories. Upon occasion, when necessary, if they felt the need to recover repressed memories, we would conduct hypnosis sessions for them to be able to pull out the information that was missing.
Now, are you a regression therapist yourself?
I am. I wasn't at the time.
Okay.
I first started out by being an observer. My background was in journalism, so I felt like I was the reporter. The psychiatrist was the expert on who's crazy and who's not. The hypnotherapists were certified. They knew what they were doing. So as a team, we had a pretty good team. And I began to sit in on the hypnosis sessions, and I was absolutely blown away by what was coming out during these sessions.
Now, you know, you mentioned you were a journalist, so naturally you probably got a little skepticism built into your system completely.
Yes. Yeah, I would say that I am a skeptic of everything.
And so all of us, and obviously you were blown away when you sit in these hypnotherapy sessions.
Yes.
What did you make of it at first? Did you have a hypothesis yourself before you wrote the God Hypothesis?
Yeah, well, when I first got into it, I thought, like most people think, I guess, what was in the media, that we were being visited by alien beings from other planets. They'd been here for about 50 years or so studying us. I had seen a UFO when I was a military pilot. In 1969, I'd just gotten back from Vietnam. I was an Army aviator.
Uh-huh.
I flew bird dogs, spotter planes in Vietnam.
Yep.
And I had a nighttime sighting of an orange orb near the Florida-Alabama border. I was with my boss. He was a colonel. I was a captain. We'd both just come back from Vietnam.
Where is that, at Fort Rucker?
This was at Fort Rucker, Alabama,
okay.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, right.
And we were just flying to get 3 hours of flying time. And
sure.
We flew down toward the Florida border and then came back. And this orange orb just floating in the sky, motionless, big thing, but it was high up. We couldn't tell how high or how far, but it was, you know, we just couldn't identify it. There was nothing that we had ever seen that was like that. And we made no report, because what do you say about something like that? There's really, you don't want to start a bunch of paperwork over nothing. We couldn't, it never got close. It did seem to follow us around. So we just left it at that, but it left me with this big question mark in the back of my mind. You know, what was that thing? And so I was open to the notion that there was something out there. I just really didn't understand what it might be.
And now you've written two books about it.
Right, two books.
And the second book, and even The God Hypothesis, which is a great title. I always thought that was a great title.
Yeah, well, it's not my term. It's actually the Reverend Barry Downing, Presbyterian minister from upstate New York, who coined that term, the God Hypothesis, as a as a way of referring to some hypothesis that is contrary to the ET hypothesis, because the ET hypothesis is for me too simple. I mean, it basically says that about 50 years or 60 years ago, beings from other planets traveled across millions of light years of space, and they happened to get here just by coincidence at the time that we were developing nuclear weapons. I think that's a very odd coincidence, and probably the odds against that happening are a gazillion to one. So that began not to make any sense to me, particularly because of the data that we were gathering from our subjects.
So what have you decided?
Well, what I decided was that after years of
work.
Well, it's always a progress in work at work, but or a work in progress. But I have reached the conclusion that the UFO phenomenon is much, much, much older than just the last 50, 60 years. I think there's plenty of evidence that shows that UFOs have been around here for at least thousands of years, and probably for millions of years. And I see in modern science the beginnings of understanding how that could be. I've been very interested in the development of the science of genetics and genetic engineering, the science of DNA and the plotting of the human genome. And I find really some big inconsistencies in what modern science is finding and what we've been told about the origins of the human race. I think there's a big mystery there.
And have you solved the mystery?
Maybe not solved it, but I think that I'm getting close to understanding it, at least for myself. I can't maybe not prove it to everybody else. But
reason I'm asking this is the second title, Rulers of the Earth.
Yeah.
That's a title that gets all kinds of things going in your mind.
Yeah.
So these entities that you're talking about, that you saw in hypnotherapy and whatever they talk, are they angels or demons or what's happening here?
Good question. They've been called so many things.
Yes, that's what I'm asking.
We call them aliens or extraterrestrials today, maybe interdimensionals. But in ancient times, for example, the Egyptians called them the Neteru, the guardians. That's a pretty good term. The Hebrews in the sacred books of Enoch called them the watchers. The Sumerians and the Babylonians called them the Anunnaki. The Aborigines called them the Wangina. In every culture, they've been called by different names, but I believe that we're talking about the same thing. We're talking about beings who have been here since the creation, were involved in the genetic manipulation of terrestrial beings that were available at the time, such as the ape, who were involved in the creation of the human species, and who have monitored and tinkered with us ever since. And that is a much bigger story than aliens coming from other planets to visit us.
And we talk about, and we've done shows on biblical history and connecting that, and the giant race that came and took the women, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes, the watchers.
And it seems that that's also in other, as you mentioned, as you laid out your little litany there, it's been throughout history.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of researchers in UFO field have pretty much come to the same conclusion. I was impressed by Jim Sparks' presentation here. He's a experiencer. He's had experience with these beings consciously for many, many years and hasn't even needed hypnosis. And I've run into people like that. And his new book is called The Keepers. I think it's the same concept, okay?
Yeah.
Dolores Cannon wrote a book about UFO beings, and she calls them the custodians. So whether you call them the custodians, the guardians, the keepers, the watchers, I think we're all getting at the same thing. There are beings who have watched over the human race since it started, who see it as an experiment. And my perspective is that they not only watch over the physical evolution of life on Earth, but also the spiritual evolution.
We'll follow that up when we come right back on after the break. Joe Lewis is our guest, and of course his latest book from Galdi Press is Rulers of the Earth, and we'll find out exactly what we're talking about here, so don't go away.
Tales of the Strange and the Unknown. Every month in Fate Magazine.
Fate Magazine has actually been published continuously since 1948. That makes it the longest-running publication of its kind. From psychics and spiritualists, archaeological hotspots and fringe science, to authoritative UFO and paranormal investigations, Fate articles are factual, informative, and entertaining. Subscribe to Fate Magazine today. Simply go to FateMag.com, FateMag.com, or check it out at your local newsstand. Fate Magazine is a favorite for people looking for answers and for people looking for entertainment.
Fate.
Tales of the Strange and the Unknown.
We are at the Eureka Springs Conference. Actually, it's called the Ozark UFO Conference, and we come here every year. We're at the end of the Ozarks. I'm Jerry Pippin. Joe Lewis is our guest right now. We're talking about his book, Rulers of the Earth. He had a presentation here at the conference. And basically, if you're listening to the first segment, you understand that what he's saying goes hand in hand with other guests we've had on as well. Jim Sparks, for instance, we just mentioned. And this seems to be more and more acceptable in the UFO and paranormal community.
Right, yeah. I think that just in the last 10 years or so, there has been a growing acceptance of this concept that the ET hypothesis just doesn't work. It's too narrow. And truly, once you look into the history of UFOs, you cannot deny that there have been UFOs around for millennia. And, you know, that kind of destroys the ET hypothesis, because what kind of an alien invasion takes thousands of years? You know, what kind of a alien study takes thousands of years? There has to be something else. There has to be another agenda.
And the agenda, you think, is these entities, I'm trying to understand where they came from, what they're doing. I mean, they ever
hear? Well, I wish I could answer that entirely. Yeah. I wish I knew all those answers, but let's examine for a minute what we know.
What do you suspect?
Well, I suspect that these beings are not just simple aliens, but they are what maybe the better word would be gods or angelic beings. I don't know, but I think that they are able to intervene in the human evolutionary process and into the evolution of all life forms on Earth. I think they were responsible for seeding life. Even the discoverer of the double helix of DNA, Francis Crick, Nobel laureate, wrote a book in 1981 called Life Itself, in which he speculates about the origins of DNA. And he says DNA was not an accident, didn't happen by accident, it's too complicated. The odds against that are unfathomable. And he also says that DNA did not evolve, that there is no there's no evolutionary process for DNA. DNA is the same today as it was in the first fossilized bacteria that we know about 3.5 billion years ago. And also now NASA's telling us that they have found fossilized DNA, fossilized bacteria that are just like Earth bacteria that have come from outer space. So DNA is not from here. DNA is alien. DNA is so complicated that it could not have been created by accident. Well, what that tells us is that there are some very intelligent beings someplace that were able to use nanotechnology to create the DNA molecule, which then morphs itself into every living thing. And I don't think our minds are capable of grasping how intelligent such beings have to be able to manipulate energy and create matter and create the DNA molecule.
You're not ruling out that these beings came from somewhere else, literally, or are they from another dimension, or do you just not know?
I don't think anybody can really answer that question. I have to leave that open. It's possible that they came from other planets. I think that they're, if that's the case, they're maybe a billion years more advanced than we are, not just a few hundred years more advanced. Certainly, by our standards, they appear to be godlike. They control the human mind. They control us at will. They can intrude upon our lives at any time. But I also believe that there are those among them that are trying to awaken the human race, trying to raise our consciousness level, actively trying to waken us up to the global catastrophe that we're heading toward with this global warming. This has been something that was that people have been warned about who've had alien contact, if we want to call it that. Yeah. For many, many years. In fact, the last chapter of my last book, The God Hypothesis, is all about global warming and the warnings that many humans around the globe have gotten from these beings that we are in really big trouble on this earth and that we need to change our ways.
So have you come to the conclusion that this is all omnipresent with all of this contact, that everybody has the same, these godlike beings have the same goals, or there's a mixture going? I mean, Jim Sparks talks about one group, the Keepers.
Yeah.
How about you? Do you think there's more than one group?
Well,
is there good and evil, or is that a relative term we can't even apply?
I can't apply good and evil because it requires making a judgment about something that I am not qualified to make a judgment about. I can say that what my belief is from studying ancient texts is that there are those who are here to confuse and separate us and create conflict, and there are those who are here to unite, to teach us about that we are all one, and to create enlightenment. And it's up to each individual soul to work his way through that complex and determine how his behavior is going to be on this planet. Because when we die, I think that is the ultimate abduction. We go to a place where these beings review our life. They tell us what we've done wrong and what we've done right. And if we don't measure up, if we have not learned how to love unconditionally, if we have not led righteous lives, then what they do is they send us back again to try to atone for what we did wrong, to make up things that we did wrong, or to learn things that we didn't learn. And it's the cycle of reincarnation, and that's one of the biggest secrets that's been kept from the human race by religions and by scientific institutions and by educational institutions, and it's something that I feel that is part of my mission to tell people about.
So, basically, most of us are reincarnated because most of us probably don't reach whatever goal we're supposed to be doing.
I think that takes a long time, yeah.
Yeah, and so
many lives.
So what you're saying is your research and your efforts, you find that there's probably a little bit in traditional Christianity and in spiritualism and in other religions.
Judaism.
They all seem to be mixed up. They've got part of the story.
Yeah.
But not all of it.
Well, I think that the holy books have been edited by committees of old bearded men that we don't know. They're anonymous to us because they existed thousands of years ago. And these committees decided what was going to be acceptable doctrine and what wasn't. And it was decided that reincarnation was not acceptable. And that was an issue of control because religion has been used to control societies. And they thought if people believed in reincarnation that they wouldn't behave in this lifetime because then they could... they knew they could make it up in another lifetime. I think it's the opposite. I think when you know that you've got to come back, if you don't do it right, you try real hard to get it right.
Interesting discussion here. We only have a couple more minutes or so. What do you, you know, you're pretty firm on what you believe at this point. I think you're what do you base this on? Basically, the hypnotherapy regressions and the stories.
I base it on. I've done a lot of research aside from the UFO phenomenon. I've really pored over the ancient texts, the Dead Sea Scrolls, the Gnostic Gospels, the Sumerian texts, the Vedic literature. You know, I try to put the UFO phenomenon in a context of human history. And when you do that, you see a great, huge picture that extends all the way back into Aboriginal times and beyond. But it also has to do with what I have found in using past life regression therapy on individuals and what I found when I did my own past life regression.
And do you know much about your past life?
I talk about it in my book,
okay,
which is published by Galdi Press and available on the Internet.
Well, he obviously was a book plugger in a previous life. No, didn't he? Yeah, no. Very good. Got a third book coming out?
Oh, God. It took me 10 years to finish this one. So I don't know.
What we're talking about the future here, what is the plan for these godlike creatures for us, just to make us better? I mean, it looks to me like they could intervene on global warming.
Well, they could, but we'd just screw it up again, wouldn't we?
Well, I think so.
Yeah, I don't think their plan is to intervene. I think their plan is to watch their experiment come to its conclusion, and whatever that conclusion might be. But I do see beyond the horizon a new age on its way, coming towards us, or we're going towards it. And I think this new age is going to be populated by humans that have reclaimed their roles as immortal, enlightened spiritual beings.
Reclaimed.
With psychic abilities.
Yeah, you felt we've had that at one time or
not. Oh, yeah, I think that we truly are that. I think that these bodies were designed to limit our sense of perception. And we are truly like blind men trying to grope around on this planet, trying to figure out where we are and what we're doing here. And but in truth, we are immortal souls, and we live in a non-physical dimension, and we just happen to be in this body at the moment, experiencing what it's like to be separate from God and from the One.
Well, what do you make of the vehicle sightings, the UFOs themselves?
Well, they're quite remarkable. I've had a number of sightings myself, and I've seen a lot of remarkable videos, and they certainly lead me to believe that they are interdimensional vehicles, that they are not spaceships in the way we think of spaceships, that they do not really fly through the air, but rather create a force field around them that exempts them from the physical laws. I really see them as portals to other dimensions.
We're going to have to leave it there. It's an interesting book, I'm sure. I know the first one was, and this one's by Galdi Press. And you did such a good job. Plug the title one more time.
Okay, it's Rulers of the Earth by Joe Lewells, and it's published by Galdi. That's G-A-L-D-E Press, and they're on the Internet, and you can buy them through their website.
That's right. And they happen to be a sponsor of ours too, so
yeah,
they can click on and order it right here.
It was introduced here this weekend at this conference for the first time, and they sold out in the first 30 minutes after I spoke. So I think there's a lot of going to be a lot of interest in this book.
And so in other words, you feel that you speaking at these UFO meetings like this, you have an audience that's open to what you're saying.
Much more so than maybe 13, 14 years ago, when everybody was more concerned about propulsion systems and the hardware and all that, and now they're beginning to see that there's another dimension to this that is maybe more important.
It's always interesting. Thank you, Joe. This is Jerry Pippin. We'll be back with more shows from the end of the Ozarks at the Eureka UFO Conference. Actually, the Ozark UFO Conference at Eureka Springs. We'll be back. Thanks a lot.
Our own location producer has been Roberta Scott. The lovely Jane Swartley has been our post-production editor. Until next time.
Oh, not later. Well, Roberta's lovely, too.
I got myself in a jam here. It's time to go, folks. Cheers.